Hi everyone, just a quick note before I start. There were some technical issues with this episode. I tried to record them, or some of them again, to fix them, figure out what was going on. But I don't know if they moved to the end of the episode, or if they're still there at all. They seem to vanish with what I was looking at. I couldn't track where they went, if they saved it all. So if at any point things get a bit weird, and I repeat myself, or you hear the same kind of conversation happening throughout the middle because things did move where I wanted them to, just bear with it. I apologize again for this episode, but please stay tuned to the variant because there's a very important little announcement I make. So thank you. Hello and welcome back to another Room with a Review podcast. I still don't have a good opening sequence, title, introduction, but I'll get one eventually. I'm also going to add another new section to this week's podcast, which will be my recommendation. That recommendation each week will be various. In addition to reviewing some of these texts, it could be some kind of app or podcast. It could be some TV show. Who knows? It'll just vary. It could be a book. And it'll be generally things that I'm in the process of reading, viewing, playing, whatever. And from there, it could be something that I will review. It could be something that I won't review. It could be something very education-based. It could be something that is not based in that. It could just be something that I think is really, really good. Is good for informing various things, but doesn't really have a place in a classroom. So just as we go forward, that's something that I'll be doing probably every week. That's the plan. But for now, to start with, as always, it's the feature text. And in this case, it is Black Klansman. Spike Lee film from a couple of years ago. Was it last year even? And wonderful is all I can say. I saw it for the first time last year. And it really made me laugh. There are some very, very, very funny scenes, but also some very, very shocking scenes, especially if you include the recent live footage from a couple of years ago that was used to conclude the film. On second rewatch, it doesn't quite stay at the same level I thought it did. When I first watched it, I thought this is a brilliant movie. I think it was really, really well done, great ideas and message in it, and just a strong overall film. But after I rewatched it, I felt that there was a couple of areas that it could have been a little bit better. And it needed just to be pushed in some other directions. Now, this is a difficult one because you probably are going to struggle to use this in a school context, and I understand that. But I think it's what it does, and the ending is a little bit on the nose and direct. But I think I'm one of the people that maybe is a bit happy with the ending, the final few scenes. So for those of you who don't know what this movie's about, it is a African-American joining a Colorado police department. They're trying to integrate and have better representation of African-Americans. He's there and he gets sent on assignment to infiltrate or go undercover for a Black Panther type rally, a activist rally, and he's sent there and he meets political minded people, but he doesn't really get affected by it. He stays convicted, strong in his convictions, so he wants to keep being a police officer. And then he decides to investigate the KKK, which I'm not clear on it if it's a legal organization at that point in time or not. It seems like it is in the movie, although from what I've briefly looked up, I couldn't really tell. I'm not sure if it was a national thing or a state-based thing. But anyway, he calls them up, and on the phone, no one can tell who he is. So he calls up and says he'd like to join, gets sent a pamphlet, and then he's allowed to kind of run that investigation further. So him and another police officer slash detective, they work out a plan. The other guy, played by Adam Driver, goes undercover, follows through, joins the KKK, has to kind of stick with it, go along with all their stuff, And the film just kind of rolls out from there. Now, along the way, what we also get is a really strong comparison to an exploration of how far have we really come in terms of racism and whether or not we've gone backwards a little bit. And there are some really, really, really funny scenes where they're just absolutely complete satire of the KKK and the kind of people that join them. And I think those are genuinely just so, in my opinion, accurate, but also genuinely funniest scenes of movie from the last couple of years. I don't think there are not many movies that have been, I mean, Jojo Rabbit was very funny, but there aren't many movies that hit the same levels of comedy as this does in those key scenes, especially the phone calls where Topher Grace's character, who plays a politician and he's still in politics, basically deceiving him about whether he's African-American or not, and Topher Grace's character is, you know, being racist and things like that, and everyone's just laughing at him. It's just very, very funny. And I always say to people, oh, it's got one of my top three favorite KKK satire scenes of all movies. The other one's coming from Django Unchained, has a really, really funny one about the masks and how ineffective they are and why they're a terrible idea. And then also from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, the KKK scene with Cyclops and Homer and George Clooney and his group that turn up and basically bring down the KKK. Very funny. All three scenes, if you haven't seen them. So you can just YouTube them. They're all freely available. They won't really ruin much about the movie for you, but Black Klansman has multiple of those scenes, so I just kind of include it as one, because I'm not going to say there's more than one, even though there are. Yeah, so that's kind of what this movie is about. And I think in terms of a satire, it does a really, really good job. But what I was saying is it makes these very, very clear and direct parallels between what's going on in the 70s and now, because it's based on a true story. I say based on. There is obviously some big fabrications going on. But I didn't pick up on it as much the first time. I thought it was more subtle than that. But when I rewatched it recently, I found that it was very explicit in making that point, which I don't mind, but it was a little bit disappointing that it wasn't just a little bit subtle throughout the movie. More subtle anyway. Because basically they ask, what would happen to our country to ever get put under the control of someone who is so racially biased and prejudiced? And obviously, when this movie comes out, in the middle of the Trump administration, it's making a very clear point. At the end of the movie, then, we get images from rallies, white supremacist rallies that are being protested against, and how peaceful protest, or not peaceful protest, but people that are protesting on behalf of various issues are then being attacked by whether it's white supremacists or other people. So we just get all kind of horrific footage, including a car running over people, and it's all live footage from the last few years, even now, so 2020, it's all from within the last 4 or 5 years, and it's very, very disturbing. I know people that have watched it, they say they just turn it off when the movie proper finishes, before, I guess, these last couple of scenes. They don't keep watching because it's just so disturbing. And then we also get overlaid with that footage from various politicians that have supported these right-wing / neo-Nazi groups, including obviously Donald Trump, who failed to condemn these violent people, but also the character Topher Grace played, his comments from a few years ago were also included in it. And you can just see that he's so absolutely prejudiced, racist against African-Americans. He barely tries to hide it. So I think in terms of that movie, that those final few scenes, I know a lot of people are critical of them, that it's too direct, it's too obvious, it doesn't leave much for you to kind of interpret. What I do like about these final scenes, though, is that it really encourages you to stand up and take action and pick a side, which, I mean, most people would probably pick the side they should pick, the side of equality and tolerance and acceptance, but, you know, some people wouldn't. And I think that's one of where this film is good at, in that it does make those people that don't have a stake in the game really choose where they want to go with this. And that's one of the the nice things about this movie. So, look, I'm going to be honest, there was a bit of a recording glitch, and for some reason the recording got split into two. What I said in the second component then got lost. So I'm trying to recall what I did say in that, but just so you're aware, there were some bit of glitches going on. Don't know what happened, but I may end up missing some things I thought I'd talked about already. I did go back and listen to the first bit of the recording and I remembered that stuff, but there may be things that I wanted to talk about that I've missed. But anyway, let's resume. Sorry for that little interruption, but it was getting in my head that I was gonna have problems. Anyway, I think character-wise, it's really, really good. So Ron Stallworth, the central character, again, great satire through him. The characterization of these other characters, Adam Driver's character, really, really good too. He gets brought up as, you know, pick a side of, you're playing this Jewish character, so the character itself, you're a Jew. Why aren't you upset by this KKK group that's also as hating on anti-Semitism as much as racism? So we get shown these different kind of perspectives and we constantly get put in that perspective of what are you doing about it? And Ron Stallworth and the lead female that he meets at the rally and then kind of dates throughout the movie, she's very much an activist. She's leader of the student union. So she's one of the big leaders against racism. And she hates police. And so again, we get this kind of view of, well, which side in this conflict do you take? Do you take the side of the police because they're not all bad, or do you take the side of the people that have been wronged by police and want more justice in that set? So we're constantly put between these different conflicts, and Ron kind of epitomizes all of those, that he's on the side of the police, but he's against racism. He's on the side of African-Americans against the KKK, but he also can't blow his cover. So all of these things going on. And I think that's what works well for this movie, that we get shown it through Ron, but we don't spend so long on Ron that we're missing what's happening, and we constantly get these different perspectives being thrown to us. And we see it's not a, hey, here's all the struggles black people have gone through or African Americans have gone through and anything like that. But it is very much a, look at the things that have happened, look at the things that are happening now, make a decision about where you stand on them. And yeah, in terms of characterization, I think it's really good. I do think that there are some scenes that could have been a little bit self-indulgent. You've got when they're at a disco nightclub and Ron is dancing for 3 to 4 minutes. The characterization that we get from that is over at that point. We needed like a minute and a half of it. And that happens a couple of times. There are some scenes that just keep going and you kind of go, yeah, okay, I've got it. So yeah, I think in terms of rewatching it, it's not as enjoyable, but in terms of it being worth watching, absolutely. It's definitely a movie that I think everyone should see. But I think the score itself is also really good. It matches the theme of the movie and it blends in and out quite well. But overall, the concepts of narrative, character, representation, they're all quite strong. And perspective especially is really strong. In terms of where you would use it with teaching, I think you'd probably struggle to use it in many cases. As I already said, it's not a movie you kind of rewatch. So it's one that you could recommend to people and say, hey, go and watch this because I think it will inform your opinion in a really good way. And I think it does do that. It definitely does, as I said already, make you take a stand. And your opinion does become informed. But what I think also it does is it really presents to you that issue of why we've kind of gone backwards. I know I've touched upon that already. But I think that is the important thing, that it contextually it's so important. Now, in terms of other aspects, it's filming-wise, it's great. Spike Lee's good filmmaker, director. There's no very solid camera work. There's not really much that's innovative, but I think the narrative is so strong. And as I said, once you watch it once, it's really, really good. I think it's a movie you could rewatch a few times, but you'd need to space out how often you watch them. It's not the kind of movie you could watch every year. I think every 3 or 4 years, you watch it came on TV, oh, cool, I'll watch this because it's a good movie. I think you'll just pick up on different stuff each time, but I don't think it's one that you'll change your opinion of drastically. So, yeah, again, I'll just repeat that I lost part of the recording here and lost, therefore, some of the things I was going to say about it. But what I will say about it is what I think about this movie. It's not in that top tier of movies that is mind-blowing, will change you forever, and you absolutely have to see. I don't think it's in that category, but it's definitely one of the, in the top, it's one of the movies you should see. So if we go through, there's like a couple of these tiers, and for each person they'd have different movies in there, but if you had the top tier of groundbreaking movies that will, you watch it and it will change you, or it will have an impact on you, you know, it's not there. I think below that you've got really, really stunning, beautiful, solid movies, and a lot of people would really, really appreciate them. And they're just really, really, really good movies. I think it's not quite in that category. It's that third tier below that where you've got, it's a really, really strong movie and there's not much to really criticize about it. And it does have really good ideas in it, and it's got a really good narrative, and it's something new and different, but it just doesn't quite hit that same level. There's something about it. It's really, I think it's limited by its own ideas, in that what it tries to do, it achieves, but because it was only trying to achieve those things, it doesn't go further than that. It doesn't look at the broader issues of racism in the world. It looks at this very specific context from the 1970s and then the connection to now, which is great. I think that's a really worthwhile thing doing, and I think it's really interesting to see movies do that. But it's not, go back to when I did Parasite a week ago, or just over a week ago, it's not in that same tier. Parasite, there's lots you can take away from it, and it does this good comparison of rich and poor, as I talked about in that episode. But the way the narrative is told to us, as I said, it's more of a two-act structure than a three-act structure, and this narrative of constantly turning, changing, you don't know where it's going. It does so much more because of that. So again, that movie doesn't do much in terms of innovation, in terms of form. For some people would argue that differently for Korean drama, but yeah, Black Klansman is that next tier below that, because it, as I said, it limits itself. But again, excellent movie. I don't give number ratings, so you're just gonna have to take my word for it that it is worth watching. Watch it if you get the chance, but watch Parasite first is what I'd say. So I will leave it at that, and then I'll be back in a moment with Ad of the Week. Ad of the Week this week. I don't have a current or recent ad for you. I haven't seen any that have come up at all or grabbed my attention. So instead, I'm going to talk about a couple of old ads. So in an episode that talks about racism, let's also talk about sexism. Sexism in car ads. I am shocked that ads from only 2 years or so ago are still pretty sexist. Maybe I shouldn't be shocked. I don't know. But I find it amazing the way they advertise cars to men and women so differently. And I'm offended as a male about the way we're advertised to. I'm offended on behalf of females, if I'm allowed to be. But what you get, so the ones that spring to mind, there's a couple. Honda was really bad at this, but Ford, not so great. And some of these car ads are really, really, really good. So I'll touch on a couple, but I don't want to go for too long either. But yeah, so the one that I always think about is there was this one for Honda. I think it was a Civic or an Odyssey. I can't remember which one, but it was only a couple of years ago. It's hard to find these ads, by the way. And what happens is there's a male and he's getting ready for work, putting on suit, clothes, whatever, and he gets in the car, and all the way through it's just been, oh, his kids' toys are in the way and he's dealt with them, and then his wife's drink bottle is in the car. And my issue with this ad is still we've got this traditional role where the male goes to work and the female stays home. That was one. But two, that again, it was about body image for females, because it was something with the ad. It said something about, it made some kind of connection about fitness and going to the gym, which is fine. I'm not saying that that is a problem by any means. That's fine. But both males and females do it. But we're focusing on the body image for females, for someone that apparently isn't going to work, while for males, they're defined by their job. And again, why not do this the other way around? Why not have it the female going to work, the male's gym equipment? What difference would it make to the ad if it was that way? But keeping it this way just kind of perpetuates those same stereotypes we've always had. So Honda, get your act together. I don't like it. Secondly, so many ads that predominantly, I think, are oriented towards males are about the specs and what they can do. As someone who's not particularly into cars, those things mean nothing to me. I know what they do, but I don't care. I'm going to go buy a car, I'm going to test drive it and see what it can do that suits me. I'm not going to buy a car because in an ad it says it's got X amount of braking power. Maybe if that thing's important to you, fantastic, but you're going to find those things out anyway when you go and buy the car. Don't put those things in the ad. Make the ad interesting, make me want to buy the car because of how good it looks. Don't make me want to buy the car because unless it's a really specific thing, if it's a truck maybe, where you need that kind of thing. And a big ute, I can understand, but if it's a car and they talk about, oh yep, we've got all these things added to it. You know what? I'll check them out when I go and look at the car. I don't know. But again, those things, they frustrate me because they don't make me want to buy a car. They don't make me not want to buy a car, but you've spent all this money on it and that's the best you can do. There was one I talked about with the Super Bowl ad, the Smart Park, was really good. That was a good ad. Talked about a really important feature, but it made a lot of fun. And I remember the ad still, Smart Park. Don't remember why, what company it was. I think it was Toyota or Ford. It was one of those two. But yeah, I think what was really good about that ad is, again, it stuck with me. And another ad that stuck with me is the Hilux ad where it goes off the cliff and it's got the song and the man's lonely and sad about it. And then it shows up on the beach. And again, that's a pretty memorable ad. It shows you how indestructible those cars are. And again, a clever ad that shows you enough about the features but without banging on about them and being too technical. That's what I liked. So Honda, I think Honda especially sticks out to me as doing really technical ads. They also had that cool ad though, which was the Rube Goldberg machine and how all the car parts work together. That was cool. But again, that was a memorable ad, but it didn't really make me go, oh, I'm going to buy a Honda because of it. So Honda's advertising department is not great. But yes, that's what I just want to talk about ad of the week is these. You get some really, really, really effective ads. So as I said, the Hilux one sticks out, the Smart Park. I could look it up. I'm sure it was Ford or Toyota. It was definitely one of those two. Or Hyundai. Anyway, it was one of those. But then you've got other ones that... And also, I mean, as I said, I've spoken about how males advertise too, but females, it's like, hey, I'm going to buy this small little car that I can go to places with my friends. It's just a place that'll get me places and I'll have fun. That Holden had one of those ads and Honda again had one of these ads. I think it was a Honda Jazz or Civic maybe. Oh, come on. Like, let's respect ourselves here. Females are not just getting in cars to go to places where they can dance around. Nobody does that. Nobody. So it was the one that I just know that had the song with Stomp Around Like a Brontosaurus. I'm not going to sing it, but you could look it up and you'll find the ad. And it doesn't advertise anything about the car. There's barely any focus on the car. Maybe it was a Mazda. Oh, it might have been Mazda 3. Anyway, so just something there that... And I teach these to students. I use these car ads to point out issues about gender. We do a unit on gender. So, and how it gets represented. And I use these car ads all the time. It just blows my mind how horribly sexist they still are, that it puts certain expectations on males and females while advertising products in a very ineffective way. So those are my ads for the week. Yeah, go and look at some Honda ads from across the years and you'll see the ones I mean. There's the Rube Goldberg machine, which was quite good, memorable for the company, but in terms of any of their car products, yeah, not great ads. All the ads are slightly problematic, I think, except for that one. And yeah, that I think it's Mazda, Stomp Around Like a Brontosaurus. The Honda Jazz, again, similar sort of thing. And then look at ute ads that are different to the Hilux one. The Baby Come Back, that's what the song was. But anyway, those are some recommended ads for you, not necessarily to watch and go buy cars, but to watch and think about how you might use them, again, to think about gender. So the very first recommendation that I'm going to make is for a mobile game called Terra Genesis. and it's a little bit, it's quite fun. It's not one that's going to take a lot of time. It's not one of those really big battle invasion games. It's a really, really good app. It reminds me in many ways of Age of Empires. So if you've played Age of Empires, then you kind of know the thing I'm talking about. You basically are developing a colony on Mars. So you have to terraform the planet. So bring in, change the atmosphere, change the oxygen levels, bring in water, do all these things. Settlers, you can go to their planets and develop settlements eventually if you get to that point. But it's really, really fun. I've been playing it for about a week. You just need to open it up for a couple minutes at a time. I like the planning and strategy side of it. You have to think through what you're doing. So when I started playing the game, I thought I'm going to need a lot of people to build all these things and that's how a colony will work. No, what I needed was money because I needed to research and invest and develop some of these things that I made, and you needed money for those things. So I had to kick all my people out of the planet just about and start mining and mining and mining and mining and mining to make enough money to be able to run what I needed to run. But then you get new challenges as you go. So as you start to increase the oxygen, you've then got to slow down because otherwise it just continues to grow. Likewise, you've got to hit a point where everything is in equilibrium and homeostasis, which is a lot of fun, very difficult to do, but it just takes some planning. You've got to think it through a little bit and just be prepared to kind of go up and down at times. So that's kind of fun. I really enjoyed that part of it. But there's also some other challenges. So I've kind of finished the Mars part now. I'm not sure what happens after that, but there was an opportunity to unlock Venus over the last few days, which I didn't succeed at. Basically, I just had to bring down the pressure of Venus, the air pressure, and it was so ridiculously high that by the time I figured out exactly the quickest way to do it, I'd lost too much time to be able to get to where I needed it to get to. So that was still really, really fun, and I learned a lot from it because to be able to speed things up, you have to kind of, I mean, it's just the way they make the money, and good on them for doing it, but you watch a little ad for something and then you get rewarded with, it could be a revenue boost or it could be a little things called, I think they're called galaxy points, GPs, they get abbreviated too. So with those GPs, you can then speed things up or add extra stuff. And I don't mind watching like a 30-second ad while I'm doing something else, just, oh, okay, cool. Do that, come back in, type it in, and close it. After a couple minutes, I'm close it again. So it's one that's just every few minutes. You put on for a few minutes, every couple of hours if you want. You could do it once a day once you get to a certain point. But yeah, if there was another one of those events that popped up, I would learn from that experience. But what I really like about this is that it's making me think about if we were to move to space, which probably is on the cards in the next 100 to 200 to 500 years, and go to places like Mars, how would we have to deal with that environment? Is it right of us to do that, to terraform a planet? Will there be other unforeseen implications? But even the idea that I thought I needed people, but I needed money, so how do I balance those competing demands? How do I, as the oxygen grows, how do I bring it back down to a suitable level so it's not too high? All of these things, and I think it's really, really interesting. I think, recommend it to like teenagers as well, because it's something they can just jump on for a couple minutes, do it. And I think you'd get some that would really enjoy it, like the pandemic virus game that was going around a few years ago, that people really, really enjoyed, and said Madagascar and Australia and Greenland, like these great defenses against this virus. But I think it's a good game. I think people in English, science, history, geography, TAS would all get something out of it, that you've really got to plan out what your strategy will be about terraforming the planet. You've got to plan out, like, think through these logistics and implications of what happens if we terraform a planet, what are the needs and different ways we can address them. I think it's got that sci-fi approach to it that makes it interesting, but it merges all those other areas together as well. So Terragenesis is the name. Go and get it. It's, as I said, a couple minutes if it's the sort of thing you're into, but for me, it's kind of got that Age of Empires nostalgia feel to it, but also being a futuristic sci-fi kind of idea too. So that's my first ever recommendation. And as always, War and Peace, I know you've been waiting for this, and I did kind of catch up to where I was meant to be, although I then didn't read for the last couple of days, so I'm a little bit behind again, still didn't entirely catch up, but I'm getting there. I'm at halfway. I think I've hit the halfway point, which is pretty fun. and I'm ahead of schedule in that sense, so I guess I'm on track. I was thinking about this book, what I would say about War and Peace in this episode, because I kind of realized I'm not really saying much about it. We're being shown all these characters and their lives and what's happening, but there's no central complication I'm finding, and that's something I'm struggling with. That it's like, okay, these characters are just living, but what's the point? So there are complications happening in their own lives, but it's very much character-driven, which in a book is very difficult to read. So there's been an engagement. I talked about that in the last episode. There's also been... they went out hunting. That went for a couple of chapters. They were hunting down these wolves, which was interesting. I think there'll be a little bit of symbolism in that as I read on. Maybe. But it was interesting, at least in terms of just the way they live and how all their relationships take shape. But there was not much... this is what I'm saying. Like, there's no driving force behind it. There was at the start. There was this war. And I thought, okay, yeah, we're going to go down that path. It's called War and Peace. Makes sense. But the last little bit, I guess it's times of peace, and it's a good contrast that nothing's happening. And maybe that again is the point. And maybe some of you are listening to this and going, what are you doing? Why didn't you get this? It's not that difficult. You're overthinking it. Yeah, maybe the contrast is that war brings people to who they really are, and there's this action behind it. Peace does not. Peace is obviously peaceful, and it doesn't leave you with things to do, and life is kind of boring in peacetime, so which would you prefer? And maybe that's the question that's being asked. Look, I can't speak for what Tolstoy wanted. These are just my thoughts on the book. If you disagree, by all means, let me know. If you ever meet me, let me know. I'm more than happy to listen to what you have to say. One final thing I will add is check out the IF conference. It is the AATE, IFTE, and New South Wales English Teachers Association conference. It was meant to be running in July. It is still running in July. It is now running completely online. You can, obviously if you attend, you got to pay to attend, but you will have access to every single presentation. Whereas if you attended and it was a live event, you would only get to attend one session per time slot sort of thing, when there would be multiple running. So with this, you're going to have access to every single thing that gets presented, which I think is really cool. There's going to be a lot of other things happening that are still live, so we're trying to keep it as live as we can. But by all means, I do recommend, here's a bonus recommendation for you, because that's what everyone wants, more recommendations. Go and register for it when you can. It will be a good experience. There'll be a lot of valuable learning going on, and it will really, really, really benefit you. So go check it out. I can guarantee it will be worth the money and time that you spend on it. And as I said, with extra resources and extra things happening this year, it'll actually be a really, really fun event. So go and check that out. The IF Conference 2020. If you look up IFTE, so IFTE, AATE, ETA, IF Conference, you should be able to find the website, or at least go to the New South Wales ETA page and they can take you to the website for it. But that is all for this week.